Brass Dex, good morning. Brass Dex, good morning.
Yes, I do.
Brass Dex, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm trying to find out something. I've been calling a government place, and there's no excuse, no answer. And I'm trying to find out, where do I find...
Ma'am, turn off the radio in the background. It's confusing you, and it's feeding back into the broadcast.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
I'm trying to find out about... You had an advertisement about about caring of the old people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I've been calling government place, and I am not getting through. So you don't know a number, you know any number that I can, other number that I can call?
Ma'am, when we play advertisements here at the station, we don't record those numbers anywhere. And
yes,
from time to time, when people call with these requests, it puts us in an uncomfortable position because one, we don't know which ad played when or anywhere we could trace that number. And if the number that you have is not answering, we don't have any alternative. For example, the person who called just now and made mention of calling and can't get through to the number they're using. I have about 5 responses from people on the WhatsApp who said the number that the COVID hotline is 546-4500. It goes to voicemail. The number is contact for X. This person is not answering. The contact number is still the same. That's the answers you get from people who are following online. But we here have no way of tracing those numbers at all, ma'am. None. We are in more or less the same position you're in. We just hope that if there's a change in number or if there's some change, that someone would advise us. Someone who is qualified to advise us, let me put it that way, advise us on what that is. But other than that, we are at as much a loss as you are, ma'am. Sorry, I can't help you with that.
So how do I get in contact with anyone then?
Ma'am, I have no idea. I can't help you. I really can't help you. I don't know. That's the short and long answer. So you
But they didn't advertise to who to contact and to get the job.
Ma'am, let me say to you again, right? If we play an advertisement, it's sent to us the way it is. We don't script it, we don't write it, we don't vet it, we don't take information off of it and save it anywhere that we could bring up. So if you heard an ad that we played some time ago, what you heard is what we got. If it's not playing anymore, there is nothing at all I could do to help you. None. Honestly. And I'm sorry. Because you do seem to want it, but I really don't know how to help you. Brass Dex, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Peace be unto you and yours.
To you too, ma'am.
How are you?
I am all right.
Are okay, you, well, giving the creator thanks for another day. It ain't how I would like it, but I am alive.
Good.
And
same
that's
here.
greatest thing. And we have to bless every day because you see what COVID have done to us. No, color, class, nor creed. Mr. Johnson, the lady, she will have to check with Minister Ford, her ministry in Country Road. I can't remember the name of what
Elder Affairs?
Home Help. Yeah,
Elder Affairs?
Yeah, Home Help. Yeah, because they say in every parish. And, my heart goes out to this lady because it seems that she's eager. She really wants something to do. And they say in every parish that they will pick persons from the parish. So all she have to do is to check there then. Because I hear it too. Check and see. They probably would help her out because that would probably have to come on to Miss Ford Ministry. My concern this morning is Mr. Johnson. Sometimes, when people call and say certain things about certain government places, you get licks and people scared to talk and people say you shouldn't say anything because and they will victimize you and things. But sometimes if you don't know that, you hate the place or the people or whatever. But sometimes if you don't talk, things won't happen. And yesterday it was a part of the program was about the MRI. Now, I born with one of my cells abnormal, and I went to get insurance and was denied because of that. So I couldn't really save. I couldn't get the insurance, have insurance. I was a single parent, and I wanted somewhere to live for me and my child. I fought to get a home. Dishonesty with some workmen. And you know something, you try to save something, sickness come, and you don't want the long wait or something. You have to go to pay to get certain things done because they are not at public hospitals. And you know you end up then as people say patient after patient. Now yesterday about the MRI and the long wait. When you go to the doctor and the doctor say to you they are not sure if it is cancer, your whole life gone. And I can tell from experience. When I first got that, I came out. I didn't know where to go. I was just like in space. For weeks, just walking and praying for the time to come for me to get the test done. And then after certain tests you can't get, you have to wait. Every day you're laying down, you're getting it, you're wondering if this thing growing, how it is, whatever. And for a poor person and you really can't help yourself, it play on your nerves, it play on your psyche. So you know when people saying that you shouldn't say this or you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't complain, when somebody tells you what you know with cancer, huh? But when somebody told that, they don't show if it is cancer. I know I must die, but I don't want to. If I could avoid something at that time, or I don't want to go through that separation, I trying to see if I could get surgery or whatever to be done as soon as possible. So I heard some people, you know, complaining. I think they need an MRI machine at the hospital. They need one, especially for poor people. Who don't have no money or no help to get these things done, because when you hear these things, it kill you more than even maybe even the surgery, because you can't get the surgery. You're studying all the time, your pressure go up, you get heart attack, whatever, you catch a stroke, whatever, because you can't get you're unable to pay, and you're waiting, and think that you're waiting in vain. So. I who feels it knows it. Bob Marley tell you that he's one of my heroes after God and Nelson Mandela. So that is my piece this morning.
All right, ma'am. Take care, and don't lose faith. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Dennis.
Yes, sir.
This is Mohammed Nasser. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. And you?
I'm pretty good. It played some good music last night, but I thought it'd turn you tonight.
Really?
You're good in that field, man.
I like music, sir. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It is not, I don't think it's exactly what VOB people get accustomed to tonight. But they got Ken tonight, so they should go back to enjoying the
night. They enjoy. You might hear people talking about your music all the time.
So I change my music depending on the time of day and the time of night. Eh? So I don't stick with the same thing all the time. I am fickle. But thanks for enjoying it. It means I wasn't playing for myself.
I left the things for you.
I got it. I tried to call you back to tell you, but I didn't reach you. You may have left home already. Thank you.
I got the message I called you to, but I didn't get you neither. But when you go through that, you give me an opinion on it.
No problem. I will do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you will. I call you that. You see this coronavirus and the crisis that we have right now in the world? Mm-hmm. You don't think it's a good time where you don't commit, you don't want to. You know it's a good time for workers to demand ownership now to rebuild the country and rebuild all these economies and businesses that are collapsing in the world?
They don't have three things that are required, sir. One, the confidence in themselves to do it. Two, the financial backing that they'll be required to get. And three, the political and infrastructural support to get it done. So the challenge with anybody saying, I have the ability to do this, give me the chance, depends on somebody listening to them. I wanted to be a broadcaster from the time I know myself. And I get turned down 3 times by the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation.
But you never stop?
No, because that's what I want to do. And telling me I can't do it is no way to shut me up.
Mr. Jones, I would be living there. When these players were fighting for freedom, that a lot of people who own players were saying, no, that is my players, I pay for them. But the so-called free now, right? They're free to talk with the light, but not to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying, you have to keep pressuring systems, and people will eventually understand they have to break down, otherwise they'll be in trouble.
Yeah. But they don't have the courage to do it. Too many people get knocked down.
Yeah, but Mr. Claus, they have to keep talking and keep talking and keep talking till eventually, you know, me, you would have got a lot of girls coming up. I understand that you was a star boy, you there too. That's true.
Yeah.
You build courage. Yeah. So you got to keep talking to people, keep trying to push encouragement towards people, and eventually they will start to listen and understand. Because I tell you why. Yesterday on the program, I heard a guy call my name and some other people who were saying that workers should have some rights in these businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying that whatever the man doesn't pay you, they don't owe you nothing. That is not true. The truth is that if the workers decide they're not accepting the pay that the managers are paying, he ain't got no business neither. So therefore, I am trying to find out, bring a balance. You can't tell me that you got a business that making a whole set of money with the income and the workers getting tuppence, and you can tell me that it's your business. Not your business. The workers could destroy it. There are businesses in America where rent have been destroyed because the workers carry everything from the warehouse. And they can do nothing about that. In Barbados, when the Honorable Bradford Tate was a minister, the merchants asked him for an increase for shrinkage. And Bradford Tate told him, what is shrinkage? Say, oh, you have a fridge in a box. And then when the fridge is delivered, it's only a box. And Bradford said, I never see a fridge shrink yet, so you're not getting any increase. What I'm saying that people, I agree with you, Mr. Johnson, that people don't have the courage, but by talking and talking and talking and talking, eventually they will have the courage. And we also got to remember, failure is not a crime. There's not one black human being that I know that stand up for black people that live to see success, because we're still the same position. Martin Luther King, Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, you name them. The guy there from Jamaica, you name all of them. All over the world, the brother from South Africa. All the things, and still we end up at the same level. All I'm saying is now that coronavirus has, and by the way, the government Barbados said they're going to put all these millions, hundreds of millions into these businesses. Why they don't let the money go in as the workers own? What's your opinion on that, Mr. Johnson?
Sir, because I said to you, the 3 things that stand in the way of what you're suggesting: the confidence of the person to do it, the financial backing, and the political backing to get it done. If, unfortunately, Brother Nasser, the history of government providing developmental funding for individuals to do things is not a pretty one in Barbados, and you've been around long enough to know that. We had the Barbados Development Bank, we had the Barbados National Bank, and the charges and countercharges and the stories and the people who took money and didn't pay it back, and the people who, there was an agricultural project that allowed people who had farmlands and went into agriculture to get equipment at duty-free prices. The allegations were that rather than equipment, they bought high-end vehicles, double cabs, and they say, but we needed to transport our produce. They got it at duty-free prices. Their children drove it to school, and they lorded it over people. They didn't pay back their loans. So every time a government has tried to set up an institution or institutions to do exactly what you're suggesting, wastage, cronyism, exploitation, and bad mouth have destroyed it. And to try to reconstruct it based on that history, you into construction, or you were into construction, you have been involved in construction, so you must know that there are times you just decide, you know what, we can't build on this foundation anymore. We got to find another structure, another foundation. We got to dig up the whole thing, start back from scratch. Sir, there is merit to what you are saying. The problem is how it is executed and the history of what has happened when that has been done. Under previous Barbados Labour Party administration, I remember all sorts of accusations about people who were not contractors, registering as contractors and getting government contracts because them is friends with this minister and them is friends with that minister. And I could tell you the names that were called because I know some of them personally. This person didn't know how to hold a hammer. That person never hold a saw in their life. What kind of contractor them is? And they gain contract to build 3 and 4 and 5 houses. So that's our history. That's what you're trying to build on. And it crumbles every time. Because no matter how strong you may feel your argument is, no matter how correct you think it can be and how it can assist people, you're building on a structure that people have no confidence in, that people have lots of bad mouth and stories to spread, and it gets knocked down every single time. And until that changes, whenever that is, the same thing can happen again, sir. And that's why government, regardless of 300 million, 400 million, or how much ever you plan to put behind infrastructural works, you're going to get the same thing being said. Because that is what people will recall and remember. Not the success stories, the ones where they didn't get anywhere. And that's what we're fighting. It can always come up every single time, sir. But, yeah, as you say, it has to be said, so it will continue to be said. As always, interesting. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Morning.
Hey.
How are you?
I am all right, and you?
I'm fine. Yesterday, I was listening to Mr. Ellis, and I kind of understood where he was coming from, where he was like saying that, you know, people always expect certain people to go forward on their behalf, and we have a culture, to me, in Barbados where, you know, people want to sit back and, like he said, enjoy these sweets when other people have gone forward on their behalf. But when you step up, you know, you get all kind of labels put to you. But what I am really calling about, the gentleman who's, in my opinion, my humble opinion, seemed to be rejoicing at the fact that President Donald Trump has been affected by COVID-19. I have never heard anything, so I mean, how to put it, the whole world has been affected by this COVID-19. Economies are on lockdown. And I don't know that if the balance of power sways other than outside of the United States of America, that economies like ours, our freedoms are going to be in a good place. And I know the history of America has not always been a good one, but when you look at it realistically, people from all over the world, from as far as the continent of Africa, China, Asia, the Caribbean, everyone seeking asylum, seeking a better life, has always flocked to America. But it seems now that the president of America today is being blamed for the history of America. We are at a junction in history where there are so many forces maintaining. Hold on one second. Hello?
I'm listening to you, Kelly. Yes, you asked me to hold on.
Yes, I'm here. We are being affected by forces that people are not looking into deeper. No, right now, ISIS is in Mozambique. They are beheading people again, they are killing people again, and people have to be fleeing their homes. The same America that everybody is crying down, the same Donald Trump, they will expect him to go go and protect them, or even any other part in the world, you know. And I want to say, the Bible says in Isaiah 5:20, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And the old people used to say, what ain't kept you ain't passed you. Again, it says in Hebrews 13:17, obey them that have rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch over our souls, as they must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is profitable, for that is unprofitable for you. Now, I remember when Barack Obama, because I don't know, you could just like a president because of the color of his skin. Because for years, black people, especially in Africa, have had leaders who share the same color tone, but they enrich themselves, they live, you know, posh, they travel around the world, and nothing to the benefit, that redounded to the benefit of the masses, especially in African countries. I remember when Barack Obama was running, and he had belonged to a church, but the pastor's name was Reverend Wright. And he spoke up against the history of America, how they enslaved black people. And this CNN that is so much pushing this hatred and animosity in America between blacks and whites made that man look like the maddest character that they could find, because he was bringing the agenda of black people to the forefront. And Barack Obama knew he was not a civil rights leader. He was a career politician. And in order to further his personal agenda, he had to dissociate himself from Reverend Wright. And yet, when Donald Trump came on the scene, all of a sudden, they made it their issue to make him now discuss the issue of the history of slavery and all the rest of it, to use a term that you commonly use on every day in the media. I don't know what you have to say about it, but I will listen if you want me to hang up, or listen now.
Ma'am, I have nothing to say.
Okay, God bless you.
You too, ma'am. Brass Tax, good morning.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, hi. I was listening to the program last week. I can't remember if you were on. There was a discussion about investment and lack of investment in Barbados. And a couple of callers ago, I think it was Mr. Nasser, who was talking about workers owning the business.
Mm-hmm.
You are more knowledgeable about tourism than I am, or the tourist industry in Barbados. Is there any tourism entity in Barbados that is actually publicly owned, that the public can own shares in? Is this in Barbados?
Not that I could think of off the top of my head. There are entities that over the years have been government-owned. There have been entities that privately owned, but I can't think of a tourist-related. I'm scratching my head.
Anything no, at I all? Can't, I can't think. Business, anything?
That's owned by what? The general public?
Public that you can own.
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Isn't this an opportunity? If the tourism sector needs a bailout,
mm-hmm.
isn't this an opportunity for government to acquire? Instead of getting a bailout, a handout, the government gets some sort of interest in the company, which either they buy back or at some point gets sold to the public?
Sir, I will tell you what I said to Brother Nasser a short while ago. The history of government getting involved in things and having it managed properly and to the benefit of everybody has not been stellar. For example, there was a project known as Haywood's Resort in St. Peter. It was owned by the government. It was supposed to be several hotels, independently owned, but all on one property. And they would have management, advertising, done as a cooperative. It was never managed by that. It was always one entity. The government eventually had various people managing it, Copthorne, Wyndham. They even had a local management structure in place for a while. Then it was eventually sold. There were several properties on the South Coast that ran into problems with their loans from the Barbados Development Bank and the Barbados National Bank. They were brought together. They were given several names over a period of time. Gems of Barbados was eventually what was settled on, and they were supposed to be redeveloped, made more modern, and there were all sorts of issues with Gems of Barbados, with overruns here and friends and relatives there, and eventually, one by one, the properties were sold out. There are some that are quite nice.
I agree with you, Mr. Johnson.
So hold on. So the point I'm making is, while there may be opportunities for them to do it, Sam Lord's Castle is another ongoing one, the opportunities for people, the average man, to buy into it and become a part of it seems not to excite the imaginations of the people with money. And the government can't force people to take shares in a company that owns a hotel, unfortunately.
No, but if you want money from government, if you want a $40 million or $400 million handout, in return, I need to have a 10% or a 20% stake. And at which point, you can, when things improve, you can buy that back for me, or it will be turned into shares to be sold to the public. I mean, it sounds simplistic, but I'm not talking about government running it, because I fully understand that. But if you're coming to me for taxpayers' money, which in fact you are, and I fully agree that tourism has to be supported, at the end of the day, you know, I think that it should be a kind of exchange. I have a small stake in your business, which you can buy back at some point, set a time period, or it will be sold to the public, which then allows people to invest. Because it goes back to handouts, because we're talking about handouts in the US and UK, but they did not do handouts to privately owned companies. In almost all instances, the handout went to publicly owned companies. So in effect, you are protecting the shareholders, not only the owners.
So let me say to you,
when you bail out the tourism, you're protecting, yes, you're protecting the industry, but you're also protecting privately owned entities.
Let me say to you that, let me say philosophically, I don't disagree with you.
That's all
my position has been, and I got to tell you, I agree with you on this, that if a hotel entity, a management company, one of the big names, approaches a government and says, look, you have X or Y property that we want to develop. Let's take the Sandals one as an example, because I use that as the last one we've had. We can do this, we can do that, we can do the other. We want A, B, C, D, E, F, G. We want duty-free concessions over this period. We want so and so and so and so. And you agree to it. I am saying that you say to them, no, if you don't do this, we require that. When you do this, we require that. As part of this, this is what you have to do. In order to get 25 years duty-free concessions, you must agree to 40% of your whatever should be this. Your local produce should be acquired at this level. Your this should be, so that you have a give and take. So again, if you come to me for, as you say, a bailout or assistance, I say to you, okay, if I'm going to give you this assistance, you have to market Barbados, or you have to do this up to this level. So I am giving you, yes, $5 million, $6 million, $10 million. But in return, here's what I want. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
So to me, it's called, but you see, you could only negotiate from a position of strength. If the person says, well, I close the business and you scramble with 40,000 people unemployed, then you end up with what we had with the Gems of Barbados. Because, for example, the Savannah Hotel is a nice property. It's been well developed. It was on the market recently. I don't know if it's been bought. Across from the Savannah Hotel, there is Brigade House that was for sale recently. I saw some renovations being done. I don't know if it's been sold or if it's been leased. Next to the Savannah Hotel is the old Hastings Police Station that was supposed to be taken down now that there's a new one and be incorporated into the expansion of the Savannah. And there was even talk about realigning the road to go down to the beach behind the drill hall. Now, all that is fair and good. Now, if as part of that negotiation, you said, here's what you have to do. You have to do so. And still have some public involvement in what used to be a Bajan-owned hotel bailed out by the government of Barbados. Then the public would have a chance. But if you just want to get rid of it because it's a drain on your resources and you need as many things off the books as possible, then that's what happens. When I look around Barbados, so I drive around, I see the number of for sale signs are plastered all over some properties, some of them privately owned, some of them hotel properties. I always talk about Tropical Escape because I see it quite often. And that's still on the market, $7 million. Now, is there an opportunity to develop that into something other than what it is? I don't know. Are there people with ideas of what to do with it that could be financially viable? I don't know. But it's sitting there and doing nothing. I see in the newspaper one of the best known, perhaps, places for local meals in Barbados, a restaurant, is closed and the workers saying they don't know what's happening. This is an institution that's been in the forefront of the name of cuisine in Barbados for years. I mean, years. I talk in 30 or plus years. So the question is, what is it that stops the type of engagement that you're talking about? So I don't know. Other than what I said to Bernasa, the desire to do it, the financial backing and the government support, I don't know what else could be standing in the way.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you as well. It's an interesting concept, but as I said, if I look around at everything from Caves of Barbados come back, the thrust seemed to be get foreign investment, get foreign exchange brought in, and let somebody from over in the way manage it. Speaking of which, I see there's another entity that requires a work permit. Again. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning, Danny.
Hey, morning.
Good. I like that conversation, you and that guy. He got a very good idea.
I think it makes sense. I just don't know if it can be executed.
Yeah, we need to start. Try.
I don't disagree with it, you know. I think he's on good grounds, as I said. I'm just losing my enthusiasm.
But let me get back to it. I want to just make a point here before I expand on that, because I was always thinking about calling in about hotels this morning.
Mm-hmm.
The point I want to make first, though, is that coming up to work this morning, I pass, well, usually pass along the Oystens area going up to Thornberry Hill and so on. And for a little while there now, they have been weeding the grass and putting it alongside of the road and leaving it. You remember last week I mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm appealing now to Alf Padmore and Mr. Ford Medic to move the debris from the side of the road, because by putting it in the road, we have to drive more into the center of the road to avoid debris. And at the end of the day, it is just turning dry oil into mud and just going into the drains and blocking the drains.
And we get in rain.
Pardon me?
And we get in rain.
And we get in rain. To me, it is better. Leave the grass where it is. Don't cut it and put it in the road if you're going to just do that. And if you want to just give people some money, let me give them a paycheck ready for you to come. And leave the grass where it is, because you're only creating double problems here in this area. And this, they're cutting grass all in now. And this is all up the way past, like going up Durance,
mm-hmm.
right down, coming down to Oyston. So that's just an appeal to Al Padmore and Mr. Medic Ford. Now, going back to the hotel, now, I heard a news item on your radio this morning that tells me I should call the program today. And that was in the 7:30 news. And Dennis, I don't know if you listened to it, but if you look at the St. Lucian model when it comes to hotels and the relationship with the government, it is totally different than in Barbados.
Good.
Mr. Chastner said this morning, it is no secret that St. Lucia is broke. Don't have a say. And he went on to say, this is the part that interests me. He went on to say, I wish to thank the hoteliers. I wish to thank the hoteliers for opening up the hotels and employing the staff. even though you don't have guests, and for paying them a salary, even though we know you are doing it at a loss. And that is very significant, because in Barbados it is totally different. Hoteliers in Barbados ain't opening up no place unless the government gives them money. And the thing about it is, the government have been financing these hotels or assisting them in some way over the years. They must have made money to remain there. How come St. Lucia can help the government in time of need, and the hotels in Barbados don't want to help the government in times of need, and the government is boiling down to them all the time? I am saying that a crisis is always good for hotels. They always benefit whenever there is a crisis. They come out in the begging bowls. And sometimes the government gets so used to it, they don't even wait for them to beg. The government just go and give them the money. $300 million. And that is why I say I agree with that guy's concept so much. Because if you are going to give them $300,000 or a portion of it, a large portion of it, $300 million, have some interest in those hotels. And you may see how much they would back down from it. They would probably find their own money and put into it. And I would like to see the government consider that concept, along with the one that I said before. Let the hoteliers purchase the from the local manufacturers on an invoice, and the invoice we present to the government or its agency to pay the goods are delivered. If the hoteliers still want to buy from overseas, let them do so with their own money. For too long, I would say this almost adamant to raping the economy. And the reason why you keep these people going is in times of need, you want them to come and put something back into Barbados. And they would not do it. They just wouldn't do it. And so Dennis, I like that guy.
Let me say to you two things. One, you ever went to any of the hotels in St. Lucia?
No, really.
Okay, good. So let me tell you from that angle. The hotels in St. Lucia are very much based on the life of St. Lucia and what St. Lucia has to offer. And some of the hotels in St. Lucia were affiliated to hotels in Barbados at one point or another. Cunard owned Le Toque in St. Lucia, and they owned Paradise Beach Hotel here.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They were both bought at the same time by Sandals. Sandals developed St. Lucia. They did not develop Paradise Beach Hotel.
Oh.
They were not happy with the beach at Le Toque, and they built a swimming pool that ran parallel to the entire length of the beach. They had a lifeguard station hut built on a rock in the middle of the pool and taught people to water ski on the pool, in the pool.
What?
Yeah, I know that because I was there. Okay?
Oh.
I ain't talking about nothing that I read nowhere. I was there. I went there, okay?
Right.
No, which is why I always talk about this connection.
Mm-hmm.
They use local fruit and vegetables on their menu big time. So when I sat down to breakfast, a nice young lady came up to me and said, "This morning with your breakfast, you have your choice of freshly squeezed mango, orange, grapefruit, five fingers, this, that. Would you like to have one or more of them with your breakfast?" She asked, "Would you like some tea?" "Yes, I would like tea, please." And she came with a whole suitcase. I opened it up. You want lemon tea, limegrass tea, asafoetida bush tea, this tea, that tea, the other tea. She ain't come and hand me no teapot with nothing in it. I had to select it. So, when you have that, and then you have the spas that tell you about the hot springs and the various other things. Then you have Groselier by Night. That's part of what they present to you. So the lifestyle of St. Lucia is part and parcel of what they do. So whether it's Berthier Pearl or whether it's Sandals or whether it's one of the high-end ones is the same St. Lucia experience that's being sold. Now, if that is your connection, then you feel a part of the environment, you feel a part of the country, And then, if you are sympathetic to the government in power, you will assist them when they ask for assistance.
Right.
But
right.
if you don't have that type of attachment or development, sir, then, you know, you can tell them, your business is your business. Yeah, my business. That's the problem we face with competition from the Caribbean, sir.
So how could we adopt that model here, Danny?
Don't ask me. I don't have a clue. And why I'm saying I don't have a clue is because I don't have a clue. The reason why I'm saying this is because some of the people who are involved in the industry there, as you go from island to island, will tell you that they have challenges with the same companies, depending on which island they're in. Because whereas you might have that reaction in St. Lucia, if you go to Antigua, you will hear an Antiguan hotel worker at the same owned properties saying to you, we have no NIS here. When we retire, we ain't getting nothing. We have real problems with, you know, whether we're getting tips paid or not paid. So as you go from island to island, the response of some of the same companies, which is the point I'm underlying, will not be the same. So whereas you might find Sandals in St. Lucia, persons there reacting in one way, you may not find people in Barbados reacting the same way to Sandals or people in Jamaica, because there seem to be at some of the properties, and sorry for calling you Sandals, because Sandals, you're one of the people I know all over the Caribbean. They're in Grenada, they're in St. Lucia, they're in Jamaica, and I've been to them, so I know, right? And I've also spoken to the management in some, and I've spoken to the government of some of the islands as well, Grenada and St. Lucia in particular, about the practices of that organization. Because I had some problems with what was done to Paradise Beach Hotel that I still got problems with. It seemed that they don't like me, or I just picked the wrong hotels. Because Paradise gets shut down, and now Haywood's nothing done with it. And that was my lifeline for 12 years, those two properties. My children born and grew up on them. But here's the thing. What it says to me goes back to the conversation I was having with the gentleman, that it depends on the government and the type of relationship that they can negotiate that would get the response that they get. Because Sandals does a lot of advertising.
Yes, and that's what...
In their markets. It's crucial for them.
I credit them for that. They really do a lot of... And they don't really depend upon your country.
Correct. And they start... And so here's the positive. They start advertising before the property is complete, because they know that they need to get people in there when they finish it.
That's
and
right.
When I was arguing, see, sometimes I just need to shut up. When I was arguing at the hotel I was at, that they were not going to go ahead with the project at Paradise, I said to them, and I brought the ads to show them. I said, look, here in December, right? You see coming soon, Sandals, Latoque, Sandals, Paradise Beach Hotel, Sandals, whatever. I said, look at the advertisement here in February. Latoque's still there. Paradise is not there. The Paradise project is not going to go ahead. Oh man, you know, no, it must be a mistake. It just slipped. You just pick up all this foolishness. You need to do something else with your time. Say, okay.
And it comes to pass.
Of course it did, sir.
Big time.
Yep. Because I have followed how they advertise.
Right.
So when they start advertising Sandals La Source in Grenada, I know La Source in Grenada gonna open up.
Right.
And they're gonna open up big time. Because they were pushing the advertisement. They were pushing the pictures. They were showing you artists drawing. They're telling you how nice the beach is.
They do open with a bank. Or even if I did open, 100% occupancy one time.
Correct.
Is there a single time?
Correct. And they got repeat visitors. And they got cars that's going to pick up people at the airport and concierge treatment and upgrade and thing and thing and thing.
Yeah. If only they would let off a little money with Vito, it would be good.
You have to negotiate.
All right.
You have to.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
No problem, my friend. Look. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Top of the day to you, sir.
And to you too, sir.
Thank you. I have two little jobs to perform. One in particular has been long in doing, so I'll do that first.
Mm-hmm.
I want to congratulate Dr. the doctor who is now the head of BAMP. B-A-M-P.
Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners?
Yes, mm-hmm. Dr. Williams. Mm-hmm. I'm doing so maybe for two reasons. I happen to have known her late uncle, Rostin. We were very good friends. And he actually, I think it is fair to say, assisted me to get to England because he was on the government's program at the time when we used to go to Herbert House to do these arithmetic and English lessons, I call them. Mm-hmm. And he walked in one afternoon, saw me there, said, "Wait, Tate, you're school teaching, you're doing this foolishness?" And the next thing you know, I was on a plane to England. And of course, I happened to have been to the family house on very few occasions, so I would have met her as a school child. And so therefore I knew her father very well, and also her mother, both of whom I sat with on committees in a particular party, which I will not name. And the other person I want to congratulate is Mr. Cheltenham for his appointment as I think he's now the judge.
Maybe the Chief Justice. He's the Chief Justice Designate. Yeah.
Right, Chief Justice Designate, I like that. And I once remember having a little altercation with him, or he with me, I'm not sure, when we were on opposite sides of the of a red herring brought in the name of Cable and Wireless. And he dared to say something to me which I didn't like. And the chairperson of the proceedings said to him, "Well, you can't say that to Mr. Gibbs-Tate. You have to apologize." And he said, "I will not apologize to him." We then broke for lunch. And on our resumption from lunch, he was the first person on his feet who said, "I have thought about my actions of earlier, and I now wish to apologize to Mr. Gibbs-Tate." Of course, I was asked if I accept the apology, and I did so gratefully, and that is where the matter ended.
That's a big man, a man who could say I was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So I hope he carries that with him, although I don't expect him to be on the wrong side of the law when it comes to the court. So I wish him well. And by the way, just to show how gracious he was, he actually sent a copy of a book, which he signed to, by a mutual friend of ours who works in the insurance industry, and I was grateful to have received it. So I wish both of these persons well, and that is my contribution today, sir.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm sure they would appreciate it. This is Down to Brass Tacks.